Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the weekly cooldown. I am your host, Kami Jace, for another episode, a bonus episode, no less. I'm calling this a bonus stage, as it were. And of course, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. But for this bonus episode, we are going to be exploring a special theme within video games, within gaming. And joining me to explore this special bonus episode is a good new friend I've made. His name is Aiden. Please say hello, Aiden.
Hello, Aiden. Hi, Kami. How are you? I could not resist. I
Hello,
had to
Aiden.
do that. I don't. It just
Hi.
the force overtook me.
Hey,
I don't know which force. Not the one from Star Wars. The dad
that's
force
okay.
overtook me.
The dad
I'm 20
force.
years old. I'm baby crazy.
Yes, of
What can I
course.
say? How are you?
Baby crazy.
Yeah, I'm 20, right? The dad force. It's what I don't know. I don't know. I'm making things up. What? How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm
I'm
doing
having a
well.
really good time. I'm just vibing right now. I just saw one of my friends. It was really great. And now I'm talking to you, and this is really great. And I'm having a good time. We talked a little
Wonderful.
before the show, listeners. And so you might not know, but it is really great. So
Yeah.
look forward to that.
Yeah, it's really great. So, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the special topic. You are a gamer, of course. What brought you into the gaming sphere, circle, if you will?
I played a lot of games when I was like a little kid. I think I was when I was like 6 years old, probably. I think it was when I turned six. I got like a Game Boy Advance SP from my parents for my birthday and Pokemon Ruby. I got to pick it out at the store myself. It was like a really big deal. It was like kind of a big present. It was really nice of them. And so at the time, like I was pretty floored by this new world of video games because I had played on like the PS1, a whole bunch of Atari games on your PS1 disc. You know what I mean? That one. I'd played that with like my mom, because it was like I think she and her brother had had it growing up. But the Game Boy Advance SP with Pokemon Ruby was like my foray into gaming. That was like where I found the wonders and the magics of leaving this reality into another one, outside of books, which I had already come to love as a 6-year-old nerd. How about you, Kami? How did you get into gaming?
Oh boy. Well, I've explained before, but I started gaming when I was maybe 3 or 4 with my brother on Sega Genesis. Yeah, Sonic, I think it was was the first game I really remember, but I also remember playing like Super Mario Brothers 3 with my mom and my brother. We would kind of pass the controller around. So that's kind of where it all begins. And then
That's a very good game. I also played that with my mom and my sister.
yeah, I really love the oldies. But then it kind of picked up during the PlayStation
They're
1
fun.
era
They're like.
and just kind of went on from there. And
What was your favorite PS1 game?
oh God. Favorite PS1 game? That's so hard.
Yeah, man. Like mine was Spyro, probably. I really liked Spyro, and my disc was broken, so I could only play the first level over and over again. But I was really bad at it, so that was okay. I really
Spyro
very
is a
rarely even
classic.
finished that.
Spyro's definitely a classic.
Yeah.
But I see, I have this one game that's always been on my mind,
Say it.
and it was just called One.
Which one?
It literally just won.
It's just called one. I'm joking around. Yeah. And
Literally just
what was
won.
the premise of this game? Just one.
Just won.
That was how many levels of Spyro I could play.
This game was so weird though. It like I don't remember the story or the premise about it really, except that you were playing a guy with a gun attached to his arm, and you were being chased by the police in this kind of like dystopian future. And that's all I got. But like the levels were very platformy, it was very colorful and explosive. You could get upgrades to the gun arm. It was bizarre and wild and very puzzly, but it was exciting. So that's
That sounds really fun. That sounds like I saw this game
Oh yeah.
Dreams. I don't know how if you've probably already talked about this on your podcast. And if you haven't, like I know nothing about it really, so I'm not a good person to talk to about it, but it looks really cool.
Yeah.
And there's someone who's like remaking an Avatar The Last Airbender like universe and game and like in Inside Dreams, the PS4 game, and I don't have a PS4, which is a real
Yeah.
bummer because like everything people are doing in the game looks really cool, but especially the Avatar The Last
Someone
Airbender
made
thing.
like a Seinfeld horror game not too long ago,
Oh,
and
really? Is it just like at behind every door, Kramer but you're playing as Seinfeld, but the scary thing is that Kramer, there's a bunch of doors, Kramer never bursts through any of them, but the whole game you think he might. So there's
well,
like always
see, that's
suspense.
weird because like I was expecting Kramer to like burst through some door, but the game is actually like you're wandering around the apartment and like just these really creepy Seinfeld quotes are playing the entire time, and it's just the most bizarre thing. I don't know if I'd play it. I love horror games, but I don't know if I'd play that
I'm
one.
a marine biologist.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not even kidding. It's really, really bizarre, but someone made it.
That's
You
very
know what?
funny. I love that.
And that kind of leads into what I think the topic is for today, right? Dreams is this kind of way for gamers to become creatives as well. You don't have to have a whole bunch of knowledge about creating a video game. It kind of helps you go along with it. The engine is already there, the tools are already there. All you have to do is kind of imagine it and then ultimately make it, and people will play it. It's just really, really cool. You can do super bizarre things, or you can do super simple things. People are making like, platformers with like, little animal characters, apparently Seinfeld horror games, and so on and so forth. So I think that kind of leads us into our topic, because this idea of like being this kind of really how we can be creative with the games these days, and how we can use certain skills and certain things that resources that are given to us to be better at creating games and playing games.
Yes.
Yes.
I like how like broad and dramatic that pitch is because that's sort of how I type and experience the world. So
Yeah.
you've kind of got my character down pretty well, I feel like.
I'm a good
I don't know
judge
if
of
it's all
character.
correct, but it's definitely dramatic and it's definitely flowery.
I'm pretty good at both of those things.
Yes. No, it's cool. I could tell. It's like we connected on Twitter like relative like I just saw one of your tweets looking for guests who liked video games. I'm like, I definitely know a lot of people like that. That would be good. And so I was like, and then I checked out the vibe, and then I'm like, the vibe is good. And so I got in touch, and Kami and I were talking, and it's like, it's all cool.
That's
There's
me.
definitely a dramatic and a flowery energy,
Yeah, that's me.
to the space. It's very good. But yeah, I love using creative stuff in my video games because I think that that's when video games finally clicked for me. Because like I started off with Pokemon, but it's eventually my attention span got to be very bad, and so playing through entire Pokemon games was really difficult. I still enjoy them. Like I recently bought Pokemon Sword. I think I skipped Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, but I really enjoy Sword. I think that it was like with Pokemon Sword, they like said, okay, we're gonna like really think about it this time and make a game that you'll like. Like I felt like they really thought about it and they put a lot of good design work, not necessarily like into just like the battles, which is all a lot of people think about in Pokemon, but a lot of design work into the experience of the game. Like it's absurdly realistic how it feels to play with your Pokemon in the campsites in that game. It's wonderful.
Sure.
But anyway, that was like where I started off was those very simple like Pokemon like games where you're going through this long narrative and you're playing this character in the story, but really the only agency you have is what is like how you go through the story, like what Pokemon you pick to experience the story that's being pressed upon you. And I moved forward, and I found that I ended up enjoying shorter form games, which is funny because I'm like a long form improviser, but I like shorter form games than Pokemon generally, because there's almost an art to it. You're writing a story in some ways when you're playing a game like Super Smash Brothers or Overwatch, or and I those are the two games that I texted you as my like things I would love to touch on, because like those I know are talking points that I can really hit those ones, because I've played a lot of those ones. But like I think this whatever I'm going to talk about right now, I'd like to preface everything with like I think this is, as Kami said, this is kind of for video games. Like I think this totally works, and I think it's for any video game where you are telling a story with your character as opposed to living a story through other characters. Like the battling aspect of a Pokemon game would be where this would be helpful, but the walking through the grass in the Pokemon game, maybe not so much. Go ahead, Kami. I'm sorry. I just kind
No,
of went on a tear.
that's fine. So for the bonus episode, I actually kind of like for the guest to take kind of control, because it's kind of your idea, it's kind of your theme. So in addition to the two games you texted me, Overwatch and Smash Brothers, you had a kind of a specific theory. Tell the listeners what that theory was.
Okay, so the theory is that you can use improv skills, or even, and I say improv skills, like everyone has those. And it's a big foolish mistake to assume that you don't have improv skills. So if anybody who you thought was funnier than you ever told you can't do improv, which may, I don't think many people like have that specific experience. If that's ever been your experience, they were wrong. And if you haven't ever come into contact with improv, congratulations. Here's a reason for you to become in contact with it. It will help your video game skills if you're listening to this podcast. My theory is that you can use improv to become a better competitive game player,
Now,
which is wild because improv is a very non-competitive art. Sorry, go ahead.
I like this a lot, because I am trying to kind of become, not become, but get into comedy, improv, and all that stuff, and I'm a truly sucky competitive gamer, so I want to like really understand where you're coming from here. So
Okay.
start us off.
Then I will. If I'm going too long and something I'm saying isn't making sense, stop me. I'm gonna try to stop so we can have like conversation breaks and you can ask questions and stuff. And I'm gonna try to ask you questions because that's also
Absolutely.
helpful for me to share. Like just with the sharing aspect, it's easier for me to share if I understand where you're coming from in the process. And then the listener will get it better because they'll understand where we're both coming. It's great. It's cool. I don't know. It's just how I like to do
It's
it, at
cool.
least. Anyway, here I'm talking too much. Here we go. I think that the beginning of the theory is that anytime you're playing a game with somebody else where you're inhabiting a character and there's other people playing the characters on the screen, I mean, that character could be like you're playing an indie game that was made in the 48-hour Game Fest festival or whatever. I can't remember what that's called off the top of my head, but the one that was made, they made Arzea for it, and I think I literally can't remember any other ones right now,
That's
but it's a
okay.
game jam.
Right.
And so it could be a game as simple as a game jam game where you are a tiny dot on a screen or whatever else, but if you're controlling the inputs of your character and there are other intelligences on the screen. I mean, if they're human intelligences, all the better, because they'll act in a way that will be more conducive to this specific practice if you're going to take it literally. But the idea is that you and the other intelligences you can see on the screen are doing a scene together, as though you're all on a stage. And because no one's actually getting hurt, it's kind of like stage combat. And so in stage combat, you're working with everyone to accomplish a goal, right? And so I picked Overwatch and Smash Brothers because they're two games with decidedly different play styles and goals, but similar sort of theories of like, I have to d destroy the opponent to accomplish my goal in some way, shape, or form. I'm playing a character. There's X number of other people on the screen that I'm either working with or not working with. But they're very different. But in both of those games, everyone you see on that screen is your scene partner. Does this make sense?
Yes. I'm following along. Yes.
Perfect. So it's like if you've ever been on stage with somebody before for any reason, this is like being on stage with someone. So you're no longer playing a video game. You are playing a character on stage. When you're playing this character on stage in improv, you don't have lines written out for you. And this could work with like theater too. Like, I mean, I don't think this has to be specifically improv. What I think is nice about improv is it's like this very like tearing, it's an art of tearing away, of stripping down. Not mm-hmm. It's like, how do I become more intuitive? How do I become more connected to the reacting in the moment as opposed to thinking about it? So like Super Smash Brothers isn't chess. You know, like that's yeah. that's I think that if that makes any sense, it's like theater is kind of like chess a little bit if you're writing, and improv is kind of like chess if you're doing long form. And so in some ways there's a little bit of chess to it, but in other ways the key is to be in the moment. And so it's both, and there's both parts of it. I'm rambling too much. What
no,
were we talking about?
I understand.
Well, I'm not rambling too much, but it's not that it's bad. It's like I'm it's for me. It's so I can stay on track with my trying to be an effective communicator.
You're doing fine.
Perfect. Thank you. That is very reassuring. Go ahead, ask questions.
It almost sounds like the idea that every game is a role-playing game.
Yes, sure. That works too.
Okay.
I haven't heard that before. Share that with me. How does that
so
work?
There's very I wouldn't say I've heard it often, but there are people who say like every game can be a role-playing game because in every game you are essentially playing as someone who is not yourself. So you are essentially playing the role, quote unquote. Now in certain games, of course, the roles are predefined, like certain action adventure games, like Tomb Raider, Uncharted, stuff like that. The ending is usually the same no matter how you play the game. But the choices you make on where to jump, who to kill, and stuff like that, those are ultimately yours, and you are playing that role. Same thing for actual RPGs, of course. The roles are kind of predetermined, but you're playing in that role as though you are someone in theater or something like that. Again, the ending is probably predetermined, but you know, you're making the choices, you're leveling up certain characters and so on and so forth. But then there's what you're saying, which is like Overwatch and Smash, where the outcome is not predetermined. You're playing a character to win, and ultimately you're fighting against another person who is playing a similar role. And again, this is just going back to the idea that they're kind of a stage partner. You're fighting for the entertainment of, I guess in this case, both yourself, because it is a video game, but also for anyone who might be watching.
That for sure is a good way to put it. It's also like passing the focus, which we're not at yet, but I think what you just said is a really good way to sum up what we've talked about so far, that idea of like, we are performing a fight for the outcome is the total of the battle. The outcome is not like whether I win or whether you win. The outcome is like, what did we do on the screen? That's why at the end of the game, like I don't know if this is why specifically, but like at the end of the Smash game, you'll see, and an Overwatch game too, you see all these stats. And what do those mean?
Right.
And the reason those are there, as I understand it, and I obsess about them on Overwatch too much. On Smash, I don't give a shit about it at all because I'm much better at Smash than I am at Overwatch. Because Smash is like, there's less to take in Smash. In Smash, if I'm doing a scene, I'm doing a scene usually with one other person, as opposed to trying to do a scene with 12 people in Overwatch, which is like, both are very fun. One of them is much easier. If that makes any sense. So for Super Smash Brothers, because like when I play this way, it works really, really well, because it is that idea of like I am totaling a picture on a screen that becomes it's like a moving image, a moving story, and we are fighting for that entertainment, or we're fighting for the whatever. We're fighting to have become the victor, but during the battle we are constantly exchanging status.
Right.
Which, like, so that idea you said of like it being predetermined or not. Like in improv, sometimes you are doing a show like in a certain form or whatever, where you might have a predetermined character or a character that you're going to play an audience member who comes up in monologues you might be playing. And so that, like, also improv is such a broad thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what I was worried about coming onto this, is like I felt like I feel less like that now, because it's very clear that like you have a good understanding of how to talk about it, so it's great. But like I worry that it's going to be confusing, because there's so much that there are so many times I talk to people at improv and they think it's like it's short form, they think it's comedy sports, like you have to say five words that rhyme with car, like that's, which is fun,
right?
And I don't mean that to that's no disrespect to comedy sports at all, like I love short form, it's very fun, it's one of my favorite things to do and it's very fun to watch. But that idea of like it's improvised, but there are predetermined rules and roles that you're playing, like you were talking about, which is interesting to me, because I almost feel like that's more like a longer form video game. A short form improv is almost like when I was talking earlier about Pokemon, I feel like in that you have this predetermined role, like you're going to go through and you're going to experience this story and you're going to make these choices. So one of the, like a very popular short form game is New Choice, where they'll just ding a bell at you when you're standing on stage doing a scene, and they'll just keep dinging it at you. And every time they ding the bell, you got to make a new choice. So if I was like saying that, it'd be like, so if I was like farting that, it would be like, so if I was like telling a story to you in this way, it would be like, and then they just keep hitting the bell and I would make this choice instead. Like, you know what I mean?
What
like it's
saying.
Something like that. Which is, it's like, it's really fun to watch, but there's such a high level of panic, and like you have this predetermined role, and at the end of the day, in short form, you're very much at the mercy of the rules of the game. In
and
Overwatch
almost...
and Smash and games like that, I think they match the art form that I study, which is long form, which is, it's like short form. They're very short form and long form are both improv, and the tenets of both are helpful in video games, in all the video games.
Right.
So I don't want to draw too much distinction, but the specifics, the difference here is that idea of you do control the outcome in Smash and Overwatch. There is not like, and in Smash, sometimes you might play with items. I choose not to play with items because I think that it makes it more like an improv scene a lot of when you go. And also because if you ever go to a Smash tournament, they're not going to let you play with items. And
right.
So I'm not even like a super serious Smash player, but when I was growing up playing Smash with my friends, and I remember when I finally got Smash Brothers, I couldn't play it on my own until like I was probably 14 plus. Like I didn't have a system to play it on, so it was like I was never good at it. Mm-hmm. My friends were jerks, so they like wouldn't teach me how to be good at it.
That's
and
right.
Some
I was
of them
the same
teach
way.
Teach me how to be good at it, but they were so much better than me that it was like.
Yep.
Like I mean, now I'm one of the best Smash players I know, so I got a lot out of that. And actually, that person, Sienna, who I recommended to you, is the person who's so good at Super Smash Brothers that would just whoop my ass. And I'd let her do it because like I would learn, and she was actually trying to teach me to be better, because unlike most people, understood the concept that it's more fun to play with someone who is good at the game. Like, that's more fun.
Right.
And it's like it's like if you're doing improv with someone and you're trying to talk over them the whole time, that's not an interesting game. You might win. But that's not an interesting game.
Right.
I have fights in Smash with my little brother that are interesting and fun because I don't have any interest in just knocking him off the side of the screen seven times.
Mm-hmm.
The games are interesting and fun, and I also know I'm going to win. Like, they both. You can have both. And that's that idea of, like, the long-form aspect as opposed to the short-form aspect.
Right.
That I'm talking about.
I was going to say, it sounds like could apply directly, almost directly, to fighting games in particular, because it's
fighting
almost...
games, I think, is the best analogy. I think I didn't use the right terms earlier because I wasn't sure what to say.
No,
yeah,
you're fine. It sounds like it's in fighting games, you have to make a lot of decisions kind of like on the fly. And so when you're playing around with the bell analogy there, you're making these kind of snap decisions because you see, like, someone's thrown a jab, so you block, or you're throwing a jab, so they block, and or like they're using a command grab, so you use a different attack or something like that. I don't know fighting games super well, but
No, it makes sense though. That
I do
totally makes sense.
understand
How you
that.
doing?
Yeah, I
That's
do
awesome.
understand that, and that like certain things counter other things, and I kind of see where you're coming from, where you say that like having maybe like a background or some kind of experience with improv can help you make those snap decisions.
That is helpful. I mean, like I'll say that now. Like, if you get nothing out of what I have to say, if everything I say to you is bad advice or doesn't click, I promise you, if you've listened to this and it hasn't clicked for you yet, but you think it sounds cool, I know I'm right. I know I'm at least like I know I'm right. The theory behind what I'm saying is one way to look at video games that does work. And if you do buy an improv book, like any of them, I recommend Truth in Comedy because it's like the. It was like the first big one that everybody read, and I think it gets to the heart of the matter really well. I mean that idea that you're saying, like having a background in it, totally. That's what, if you hear this and you have a background in it, it'll click better because it's like, if you've done stage work, then everything I'm saying should make total sense. If you like that's, but I'm trying to describe this for like anyone who hasn't done stage work too. Like it's. I think because part of the pitch is like, you should do it. You should do, everyone should do improv. It's like therapy. It's great. It's really cool. And everyone should let everyone do improv and not, like we just need more opportunities for it. No, I shouldn't say not. Like, I don't see a lot of improv gatekeeping. It's just more like there's not enough of it in places because not enough people know what it is. Anyway, that you control the outcome thing that you said. I want to get back to that. Go read a book on improv if you end up not understanding what I'm saying and you'll get it. Anyway. The controlling the outcome, because I'm not from short form, and I'm not great at short form. That new choice thing, I think, is what you can learn from that is totally. I thought you got to the meat of that really well, in a way that I was struggling to contextualize because it was slightly outside of what I came here to talk about. But you got there, that idea of, I mean, it's not even slightly outside of it, just wasn't in my brain space yet. And that's what I love about improv is too, is like when you're doing scenes with people, you pull stuff out of your brain, out of the air, out of whatever the ether, whatever you want to call it, that could never have been there before because of the interaction you're having with another human being, if you allow that to happen. If you allow that to happen. And so in a battle in Smash Brothers, my biggest struggle is that I don't control the outcome because I think that because I'm a materialist in a lot of ways, like, and not like in the I like buying things all the time way, but in the I don't believe that I believe in fate rather than free will. So the with the new choice thing, at some point things are gonna happen to you in the match, and this is what I struggle with. In all fighting games. Because I'm very good at them. I like, when I'm not worried about it, when I'm like doing them like improv scenes and I'm really not thinking, and when it's the kind of fight that you don't remember anything that happened during it afterwards, I rock it and I win every time. And every other time, it is simply because I've allowed myself to get hung up on, well, they dung the new choice bell on me 5 times and I fucked up, and by the fifth time I had nothing to say. And
I
now I'm
see
a
what you're
wreck for the
saying.
rest of the show. And that's a struggle for me as a person. And what you learn in improv by doing a lot of improv is not to be that. Is to get to number five and either have made the new choice at number five and not screwed it up, or to screw it up and screw it up still standing with your sword in your hand, instead of just screw it up cowering with your sword in your hand. Because now, as soon as you cower, your enemy can get a punish in on you. And then, if you're playing Overwatch, it's even worse because if you fuck up, your whole team doesn't have you anymore. Like they, like you have destroyed. And I'm saying that. That's not to say, like, that's not to freak you out if you're playing Overwatch. Like, my point is, I have too much anxiety about it. And the, like if I get too many hits on me in Smash, I completely lose my cool, and I can't. I'm just totally in my head. And that's where a lot of not what the improv theory of how to win the fights is, which is what I came here to talk about, but the improv theory, the mind game of it, of like, which I wanted to talk about too. So I'm really glad you brought it up. I forgot. The if you can stay in the moment, then kind of like the, if you don't get what I have to say, go read an improv book, you'll get it. If you can stay in the moment during all your fights and always respond to the last move your opponent made with absolutely no, or if there's 12 of you on screen, the last entire visual, audio, rumble, whatever input you've received, like if your most recent move is directly into in response to what you're seeing in front of you, then even better than in an improv show, you don't even have an audience. It doesn't matter if you fucked up for the entire first half of the match. No one cares. Maybe your team cares. Your team might be mad at you a little bit. But also, like, at some point, you are not going to get fired from Overwatch unless you're a professional Overwatch player, at which point you're probably already really good at this. But you're not going to get fired from Overwatch for getting stuck in your head. So if you end up getting stuck in your head, all you have to do is be okay with that and then free yourself from it, which is maybe hard to do because I've fucking, I've sat in my chair and cried after 2 hours of Overwatch, just getting progressively worse each match, like more in my head, and then thus, like, if I can just do it better this way and then I do it worse this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm thinking too much. So that new choice thing of like, I love that. I love how you put that. Like, just you have to make the choice in the moment. And that's, if you're making a choice in the moment, then everything that happened before that moment, and this is in life too, improv is everywhere. Make the choice in the moment, and then nothing that happened before it matters, because time isn't real. Didn't mean to hit my synthesizer there, but it was kind of cool.
Right.
Anyway, what were we talking about? Controlling the fate of the game? Is that where we were going?
Well, I want to get into, you seem to want to make this about winning. You can win better.
Well, I don't have to. It's not that I want to make this about that. That's what I thought that I was. That was kind of what I thought I was going to pitch. I can pitch. I thought I needed to come in with a pitch.
Right. But
we
can
talk about anything you want, man.
If you're saying you want to improve the theory, or excuse me, improve the competitive gameplay with the theory, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go into that. So,
okay,
how do you think we can improve the gameplay with improv?
Okay. So, I think that we can improve the gameplay with improv, kind of like what I was just saying, the idea of staying in the moment. Like, that's a huge part of it. I mean, that's the, if you can not be in your head, that will cut a huge portion of your, like, if you're not, if you think you're bad at a video game for whatever reason, or you just think you're good at it and want to get better, and I promise you, you can cut down on the amount of time you're thinking right now. Like, and I'm not saying that as a professional gamer. I'm saying that as a performer, but it's the same thing in this, according to this theory. You're thinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you're doing, you're thinking too much. And also, you're moving too fast. You're clicking too many buttons and you're thinking too many thoughts. So that's the first thing, that you watch people button smash and you watch them win games because you play games with high school kids growing up, because maybe you're not an adult that got into games as an adult because games came out when you were a kid. So you see people who just don't know how to play video games, play video games. You watch bad role models. you click too many buttons and you think too much. And so rather than necessarily like try, the problem I run into, and I think that people do this because they're trying to be in the moment, they're trying to respond to whatever might be coming at them. I think that's the issue, is when people try to predict a lot in video games. And I think there is value to that. But I think that predicting there's value to predicting in improv too. That control, and that's the controlling the fate of the show thing. Like, in a long form improv show, while you don't have the rules that control the fate of the show, the players get the power to control the fate of the show in 100 ways. And most of the fate of the show is controlled by being a player who's just in the moment on stage and allowing the whim of the show to take you. So if you assume that if the show is a battle that you have to win, then you have to assume that the enemy team is performing in a certain way. They're trying to defeat you.
Mm-hmm.
And that your team is performing in a certain way. And watching how your team is performing and understanding that and firing, like it, maybe you're playing Overwatch and you're like me and you're hitting the space bar to jump every 3 seconds because it's fun and you are conditioned by your brain to do it. And you're constantly firing bullets, giving away your location, and not hitting anyone because it's fun and you just like doing it. And that's maybe not the best, like it's just not helpful. Or in Smash Brothers, you're dashing back and forth on the screen because you can. That, for me, I actually like doing, because in Smash Brothers, you can see the whole field at once. And so you can use that as a misleading tool to, like, it's kind of like dissonance in music. Like, you can put your opponent into a space where they don't know what you're about to do at all, because you're just running back and forth. Whereas in Overwatch, that'll get you killed. But, like, the controlling the fate of the game, while there is fate that is controlling you in short form, in long form, you don't necessarily control the fate of the show. And that's what I was trying to get to, is that it isn't necessarily that. So it's like you can't use improv to do that. It doesn't work. You can control parts of it. And that's the other thing too, especially in Overwatch. In Smash Brothers, it's more one-on-one. In Smash Brothers, it's like a two-person scene. I'll get to that in a second. I'm on Overwatch right now in my head. So that's what we're going to talk about. In Overwatch, you're like existing in this big space, and it is so valuable to understand what everyone else in that space is doing, because you can't control everyone else in that space. And so this is where it becomes kind of like chess. It's not like chess, because you shouldn't be sitting there and thinking about it for a minute and a half. And you can't see the whole board at the same time. But it's kind of like playing chess. If you can only see the chessboard for 5 seconds, you get 5 seconds to look at the chessboard, and then you have to decide on a move. It's like playing timed chess. Like in Overwatch, will not die immediately if you aren't shooting your gun constantly. You might die if there's a Widowmaker or whatever the fuck, like, sniping people for that reason. You might just die immediately. But that's something that, if you are in a good, clear, mindful headspace, you can replace the word improv with mindfulness a lot of the time, and it works too. The if you're in a good, clear, mindful headspace, you'll process that Widowmaker shot, and you won't make the same mistake. That's the thing I do a lot, for sure, is, like, I'll get shot by a Widowmaker 4 times before I even attempt to do anything about the Widowmaker. I just assume someone else has done something about the Widowmaker, because I just assume I'm bad at Overwatch. That's part of the problem too. Like, I assume I'm bad at, and people do this. You're doing this. Hey, if you're listening to this, you're probably doing this in your life. You assume you're bad at things that you're not bad at. Like, just whatever that thing is. Like, maybe you think you're bad at cooking, and it's like, yeah, because you think you're bad at cooking, so you never do it, and you're bad at it. You are bad at it. You're right.
Right.
In Overwatch, like, it's worse, because, like, I get stuck in my head, and there's the new choice thing where it's like, they just, like, I got to keep making decisions. And it's like, no, I don't have to keep making decisions, because it isn't new choice. It's not short form. Like, there is that to it. There is that to it. And you can learn things from that new choice idea of, like, being in the moment and not getting stuck on if you fuck up and making rapid decisions. That's the, like, you get the 5 seconds, and that 5 seconds is maybe while you're saying the thing, and then they hit the bell again. That's kind of what it is, right? Like, it's, but the bell doesn't go that fast in new choice, and it isn't new choice. And so you can respond however you want, which you can do in new choice, but no one's going to keep hitting the bell at you. You can also leave that space. You can go to a different space where you're the one hitting the bell. Like, that's what's different about it. And that's where it becomes long form and not short form improv, and where that becomes more helpful in the winning of it in a game like Overwatch or in a game like Smash Brothers. Whereas the idea of in short form improv, you have to do the new choice thing where you make fast choices, and it's hard to do, and it's really fun and cool and high energy, and it's usually really funny, and it's valuable, and it has its things like that, like pattern heightening and all of that, and fast response. They all have their place in long form. And so in a long form, you do have things like new choice, but then you also get to leave and enter the back line, which is the thing you can do to best control the fate of the show, which I'm saying with quotation marks that I'm not making with my hands, but with hypothetical quotation marks. When you're on the back line at an improv show, you're watching your fellow improvisers do scenes together, usually two-person scenes, and taking in everything that's happening. So you can remember that and do callbacks to it and use it for inspiration, because you don't have writers in an improv show, and you have to do a long-form improv show. You have like a 30-minute set to do based on like sometimes a one-word suggestion. And then you do, as a group, you do listening and following and all sorts of pattern heightening and exploration to find out what that suggestion means here. In an Overwatch game or a Smash game, like the suggestion is what two characters you start out with in a Smash game or in an Overwatch game, what all the characters you start out with, what map you're on is part of the suggestion. Part of the suggestion is the mood everyone in the room is in, which is not like, you wouldn't consider that maybe part of the suggestion in an improv show, but it's part of what affects an improv show. It's the same kind of thing. You're doing scenes with human beings, which is why this is way more applicable, I think, to humans than AI. But AI, if it's good AI, kind of works like this too. And you can, and your brain can trick itself into working with AI the way it works with people, so it can improve your play. But that idea of like, if you are on the back line, you're not in the scene. So you're not shooting your gun and you're not getting shot at. In that case, you're observing. This is your walk to the battle. This is like, that's when you think. You know, there's all this thinking to do. I was talking to Sienna. We were playing Smash the other day, and we were talking about thinking, getting stuck in our heads. And I was talking about improv, and she was talking about this game or this book. I think it's called like The Internal Game of Tennis, which is not like the idea of thoughts bouncing back and forth inside your head, which is what I thought it was. But the idea of just like, it's a similar idea to what I'm talking about, of just like you learn all the stuff and you do all the thinking during practice or during your walk to where the battle is happening in Overwatch, or your while your opponent is respawning or trying to recover during Super Smash Brothers or whatever. That's when you think, and that's when you reset, and that's when you breathe. And I think that there is a tendency to, And I say this speaking from personal experience for certain, and I think other people do it too, but I know I do it. I push too far forward in Overwatch, in Smash, like whatever. I move in too fast, and I'm sitting here preaching like the mindfulness of it. And it's like, because I know how it screws me up when I don't do it. Does that all make sense? Like,
I think so.
When you're doing that thinking on the sidelines, the metaphorical sidelines of the game, that prepares you for doing the new choice of the battle. To prepares you for dropping all of the things you thought about and just having to say things. Because then it's already in your brain. You've thought about it. You got to trust yourself more than you're trusting yourself right now. That's another part of it. Like, that's another way to stay out of your head, is just to shut yourself up. Just know that your brain is wrong and that your body will do it because you've played this before. I always have more fun when I do that too, which is nice. Cause like I, as much as I love winning games, like if I'm sitting down to play Overwatch, I don't think I'm that good at it. So I don't know that that even is going to happen. I'm sitting down to have a good time.
Right.
Questions, concerns, comments, thoughts, Kami.
Oh, too many, but you know what?
I have nothing else to do. I have all the time you have.
While we are slowly, but also quickly running out of time. But I think the last thing I want to really get out is what I've actually taken away from it. Because what you've explained to me, or what you've kind of opened up in my deepest of hearts, is this idea of, you know, we tend to kind of take games seriously sometimes. We take life seriously sometimes, and what you've kind of
Life is a big game. That's the other secret. Anthony Weiner got in trouble for showing his penis to people. This is true. I mean, I'm not the first comedian to point out that that's a reason that we're living in an absurd comedic
AI
ridiculous reality.
God's playing the Sims.
But this is ridiculous. It's a game.
No, but I think like hearing someone else say like, essentially what you're doing is taking it way too seriously. If you practice at the game, if you play the game a whole lot, you are essentially still playing the game and being in a headspace of taking it like kind of one step at a time, but very quick steps. You know, you don't have time to think about left foot or right foot. You just have to kind of go. And so I like that, and I really enjoy that idea. And I think I'm gonna take like all of my games, all of my game playing in that kind of direction, and maybe you'll see me on stage at Evo if it does not get canceled.
Whew, that'd be awesome. Hey, dude, can I give you a term for that? For if
Sure.
that's gonna be in my improv book when I finally write my improv book, because
Right.
no other improvisers have done that. No other white guy improvisers have written any books about how to do improv their way.
Right.
But the first thing in my book is that the first rule is always like yes and or whatever, or listen or something like that. Agree. It's always something like that. I think. And I don't know that this is exactly what McNapier from The Annoyance would say, but I think this is closer to an Annoyance style improv attitude, if you know the names of all the theaters. But the idea that anytime you move a chair, it's improv. This is mine. I haven't heard it. A teacher hasn't said this to me. I've read lots of improv books. I haven't seen it in anybody else's so far. I really like this idea because it was a joke I was doing with my friends when I was running my first improv group at my college, and I really enjoyed when I stumbled upon the idea because it is the heart of exactly what you're talking about. So the fact that I just talked about improv and gaming for 45 minutes and you got out of it the heart and soul of my
Yes.
approach to improv and gaming is wonderful. That's perfect. Anytime you move a chair, it's improv. It's okay. Whatever you're doing is right. If the audience thinks it's improv and you think it's improv, then it's improv. And so if you've moved, and the joke about it being a chair is that there's like the only prop you get in an improv show is chairs. So you
Right.
the most you have to do to be doing improv correctly is to move a chair and to do that in a committed way, to know that you are moving a chair and to accept that you are moving that chair and that is your improv is the challenge. The challenge is to be okay with that. And in the game world, that's my challenge, right? Is to be okay with that. Is if I didn't get four gold medals in an Overwatch game, I did a bad job, which makes me a worse player. And less in the moment. And so for all of the idea of like doing a scene with your partner and like I think you can get way more out of that concept by reading improv. But I think, Kami, what you got out of what I had to say is what the listener is the reason the listener should go get an improv book, should go buy Truth in Comedy, or should, when I release mine, get my Aiden Kinsella's open source improv manual. But the idea that anytime you move a chair, it's improv. Like it's fun. Have a good time. I've been playing Super Smash Brothers my whole life, and I would play on random because I learned at some point that the best way to get better at the game was to understand what made the Super Smash Brothers Super Smash Brothers, as opposed to understanding what makes Super Smash Brothers Marth, you know, like
Right.
or whoever, you know,
You want to understand
like
the
if you
game and
it's
not the
the fundamentals,
character.
like understanding the fundamentals of a game in a video game is like understanding the intuitive parts of ourselves that Viola Spolin, the woman who like kind of kickstarted everything in improv, you know, to help immigrant orphan children in Chicago on the streets express themselves. Improv is extremely cool. You're missing out. Viola Spolin has a book on it that you should also read, Improvisation for the Theater. That one is probably even better than Truth in Comedy. Actually, scratch Truth in Comedy. Read Viola Spolin's book for this theory. Truth in Comedy is a great book, but this theory you'll learn more from Viola Spolin because it is more. You've changed my heart a little bit, Kami, here too. It's more the Viola
Know what?
Spolin than the
That's
comedy
what we
aspect. It's
do here. We change hearts, we change
right? That's the
minds,
goal.
we
Thank
inform.
you. Can I? Yes. No, keep going. I'm sorry. I was about to invite you to my show really excitedly, and I like cut
Oh
you off to do
no,
it.
by all means. I mean, okay, well, we are like super out of time, but
We can talk later. It's
yes.
fine. Yes.
Aiden, please tell the people where they can find you on the internet if you wish to be found.
Oh, I do wish to be found. My podcast can be found at sinparent.co. That's sinparent.co for Sinister Parent Company, which is the podcast network that I direct and was teen CEO of, and now I'm 20-year-old CEO of, so adult CEO, I don't know, purgatory CEO. You can also find my personal Twitter at Kinsella Aiden. That's KinsellaAiden, Kinsella Aiden. I really like tweeting and talking to people on there. It's super fun. I tweet about all the podcasts and all the creative work I do too, so that's a good place to get more information on me. And my podcast that I was going to invite Kami to is Good Idea, which is the one that I'm going to plug right now for you to go listen to. Go listen to Good Idea. We talk about philosophy and we do comedy while we do it, and we sing and all, and it's just really a loving, wonderful show. We have other improv shows on our network, but Good Idea is the Viola Spolin one.
Very good.
Thank you so much, Kami. This has been so awesome. This has been lovely meeting you.
Likewise, and we will have you back, of course, on like a regular episode.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. That's really wonderful to hear.
Pump that brain for more ideas. All right. Yes, well, that's all for this. That's all for this bonus episode, this bonus stage with Aiden. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. And oh man, I've never been played off before. we will see you on the next bonus stage. Thanks, everyone.
Take care.